scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, happy Friday. Let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Friday, January 24th, and we get things going on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And it's a Friday, which means we also say hello to Sportsnet's Eric Francis. It's time for the Eric Francis Hour as EF joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Hello, Mr. Francis. How are you?
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. You sound crystal clear. That's what I like to hear. Let's dive right in. I know that you weren't intending this to be I know you didn't pick this timing just after Thursday's win over Buffalo, but the Flames take a 5-2 win over the Sabres Thursday night. And on this Friday morning or Friday afternoon, your latest on Sportsnet.ca is on Ryan Huska. And let's just dive in on that. Tell us about the article, and let's go from there.
Well, you know, it stemmed from my conversation with Craig Conroy recently when I kind of asked him what the keys to his team's success has been this year. And, one of the first things he says is, you know, Ryan Huska. Like, I got to give so much to Ryan Huska. He's so much better than he was a year earlier, and he's so much more comfortable. Not that he made big mistakes the first year, but just his command of the team and the job is just such that he feels now that he's, you know, he compared him to Joel Quenneville, which is probably the best thing that I could say. He said that when he was a young player in St. Louis and he had Joel Quenneville as a rookie, he was kind of quiet and didn't really, you know, have the full expansion of his knowledge. But then by years two and three, he was coach of the year and you know, he's one of the best coaches of an era since then. So he compared him to Joel Quenneville. Blake Coleman compared him to John Cooper, who's won a couple cups. And, you know, in large part, the big common denominator is his ability to empower players and work with them on various different levels, you know, in terms of giving them time off, in terms of strategy, in terms of all sorts of different things. He may not always listen or do what they want them to do, but he's listening. He's taking into consideration. And he's, you know, as Blake Coleman said, like, guys on that team, they're willing to, it's an easy guy to go to work for because he treats you with such respect and knows how to push different buttons. And the other thing, you know, one of the big things in the article, and there were so many different facets to it, but, you know, Ryan Huska has one more year left on his contract after this year. And traditionally in the NHL, coaches don't go into their final year as a lame duck coach. It doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it's usually a large distraction around a team. So when I asked Craig Conroy if he'd started conversations with him about a new contract, he said, well, no, you're kind of putting me on the spot. No, I haven't. But I probably should. So I think it goes without saying that given what Craig Conroy had to say about Huska, given how successful he's been this year with a team, you know, that doesn't have quite the depth or talent that a lot of other teams in the league has.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty safe to say that he'll be getting a new contract. I'd be surprised if he didn't enter next season with a new contract. Like, I think that's where this is going. I would think during this summer they'll iron that all out.
Well, what's really interesting about this whole thing, because it's a great read, and it's up at sportsnet.ca right now. So Conroy and Huska have been attached at the hip since the very beginning. And I can tell you that, you know, right from the get-go when Craig was going through the interview process to become general manager and presenting that Ryan Huska was always his preferred candidate to be head coach, was the guy, because he felt like, and he made mention of this a little bit in your article, even at the time in, what was that, 2023? Even at the time in the spring of 2023, when the Flames were hiring a new general manager and interviewing different candidates, big reason that Conroy wanted Huska as his guy is because he felt, as a first-time general manager, having a guy that he knew and trusted, and also a first-time head coach for a team that's going in a different direction, here's a guy that he can build with, and these two can kind of build the team together over a course of however long it's going to take, a 3 to 5 year plan, as Craig Conroy said. So right from the get-go, Huska was Conroy's guy, and Craig still went through an extensive search to make sure that he's getting the right head coach, and he landed on Ryan Huska, and Ryan Huska has been great, and so now both guys have, I believe both guys are on 3-year contracts, so like they would run out at the same time, and now you've got a big opportunity if you're the organization. Eric, with the success they're having now, and the fact, and we'll talk about this later this hour, but the fact that they're in the driver's seat for a playoff spot, that they have exceeded expectations internally and externally, that why wouldn't you extend both guys? Like, extend your general manager and let your GM, extend your head coach, and let them continue to build this summer. Like, that seems like the obvious way to go. And obviously, you don't do it now. You're in season. You wait until hockey's done for the year, but yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, it just seems like a really obvious decision, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Not just based on the surprising results so far this year, but the fact, you know, these two guys, they both sold a bill of goods based on building something. And they're doing it together. And there's a couple things about this. One is, you know, Conroy was saying that, look, we had such a revolving door here in Calgary for so many years. And Conroy, you know, was watching this all, you know, as part of the front office. And he always said that if he got the job here, you know, he wanted to try and establish a coach who was going to be here for the long term, because he remembered as a player, when there was constant change in the, you know, in the head coaching position, oftentimes players would just tune guys out. Obviously, there's a learning curve. You're learning how a new coach is. The coach is trying to learn from the players. There's a feeling out process outside of that initial bump that we almost always see. But, you know, he said, you know, I wanted to put an end to that because we're trying to build something here right now. And players talk around the league and they talk about their scenario. And he wants this to be known as a place where people want to come and play because, A, the coach is respectful and works with the players yep. to some degree. There's a new arena coming. They're building something. They've got some building blocks in place. And if there's someone who's kind of thinking about coming to Calgary, you want to make sure that they feel like they're moving in the right direction as well. So it's not just reputation that they're working on, but continuity. And, you know, signing those two guys in the summer, to me, shouldn't be a problem at all. Like, they're still going to be paid under market value, if you ask me, because the organization took a considerable risk with both of them, to be quite frank. And I think it's starting to pay off. And it will pay off for the years to come. But I guarantee they're grossly underpaid in terms of what the average GM or average coach in the league makes. And I dare say their next contract will still be under, you know, market value, if you will. And I know that fans don't care about that, but I think the ownership group does to some degree. They want the right people in place. And they've shown in the past, you know, with Daryl Sutter anyway, that they were willing to pay for the person they thought was the right one. Well, I think they're in a situation now where they can't deny, at least halfway through this, you know, a year and a half into Huska's, you know, job, and same with Conroy, that they both kind of, they're working in the right direction. That's just the bottom line. And there's a lot of positivity moving forward and a lot of things that people should be excited about for the organization. The other thing I just wanted to point out is, you know, those two guys work so well together. On Tuesday, it was the second anniversary of Daryl Sutter's very infamously disrespectful "what number is he" press conference
right
after Jacob Pelche's NHL debut. And that wasn't lost on me last night when Pelche was the best player on the ice. And, you know, that was a case where the coach definitely felt like he didn't want to play Jacob Pelche. He was thrust upon him by a general manager, and it was Daryl's mindset that this kid wasn't ready and I didn't really want to play him. So he hesitantly played him and didn't play him in a very prominent role and, of course, treated him with extreme disrespect afterwards, which is quite famous now. But, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. Now they're bringing in Rory Cairns, who may not be ready, but they've done all they can at the Wranglers level, and the GM and the coach have worked together to make sure that when he does come up, he's going to be put in a position where they feel he has the best chance of success. We've seen that time and time again. Like, I think there's five different guys, Justin Kirkland, Connor Zary, Martin Pospisil, Rory Kearns. It's a small sample size, but so far so good. You know, Jacob Pelche to a certain degree as well. These guys are in lockstep together, as opposed to Tree Living and Sutter, who are constantly at odds in terms of the way they wanted to conduct their own business. So that harmony goes a long way moving forward.
Yeah, and it's not like Conroy and Huska agree on everything, but there's an understanding on both sides. There's an understanding on Huska's side, I think, that, hey, you know what, sometimes the GM, looking at the bigger picture, you know what, he's going to bring up his guy and the guy that he wants, or he's going to, you know, want to play somebody, and for the bigger picture, I'm going to go with it. And sometimes the general manager is going to say, yeah, you know what, like, let's let the coach make the decision on this one. And I think there's a give and take there, and they've really struck a really good balance from everything I've heard in terms of the way they go about their business and their working relationship. And so now in year two for both, I think what they were looking for and what they were trying to accomplish in terms of building something and growing a team together in the two most, you know, high-profile, non-playing roles as GM and head coach, I think that's really coming to fruition. So I would imagine if you're Craig Conroy, you're like, okay, if I get another contract extension, which, by the way, I think he very much should, because he's really just started a process here. So why would you cut the legs out from under Conroy when he started them down a certain path? So you've got Craig Conroy, who needs a contract extension at some point. Why would you not extend him and just let these guys continue to build together? Because, yeah, Francis, I think it's really worked. It's been a real success story. And I think you're right. The way you phrase it is, it was a gamble to bring on two first-time guys in position. That doesn't always work out.
No, and, you know, I thought Blake Coleman said it well. He said, you know, because it's not very often that a guy who is a longtime assistant gets promoted to head coach of the same organization and has success. Like, we've seen it time and time again where that guy who played good cop for so many years can't quite turn into the bad cop effectively and run a team with authority. And Blake Coleman kind of admitted to me, he said, like, I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to do it, but he's more than exceeded expectations, and he's done it by virtue of not changing who he is as a person. He's doing it by way of just connecting with the players on so many different levels as one of these new age coaches who, you know, he's not in your face, as Coleman said. He's just a guy who is easy to go work for. So exceeding expectations is probably the mantra for both of those guys at this point in time. And listen, even if this team doesn't make the playoffs this year, I think what they've done in the first half of the season definitely is an argument for signing those guys no matter what, how they finish this year, because, like I said, it's a path of positivity and there are so many positive developments. Listen, you hear the fans after every game, Pat. Like, I'd like you to speak to just how on board this fan base is. And I know that it's somewhat important, certainly because you got to sell tickets to them, but I'm not sure we thought we'd be there at this point this season. Did you? With the fan base being completely on board and full of positivity on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see both, and I don't know what the split is, but there is a very vocal group that hates this. And hates that they have exceeded expectations.
Success?
Well, I think
I know why.
To play devil's advocate, I think they see a team buoyed by outstanding goaltending from Dustin Wolf, and a team that doesn't score very much, and in their eyes, a team that is not a Stanley Cup contender. And spoiling an opportunity to draft in a certain position and give up a top 10 pick and have that pick their pick transfer to Montreal, so on and so forth. And they feel the worry, I think, for some, as I would try to frame the other side of the conversation, is that this happened in 2014-15 and they deviated big time from their plan. and they were going forward with a younger type of retool and were looking bigger picture. Then all of a sudden they made the playoffs, won a round completely out of the blue, shocking everybody. Different circumstances, but what's not different is that they've completely shocked everybody so far this year and might make the playoffs. And then next thing you know, they're making big-time trades for Travis Hamonic and Dougie Hamilton, and now they're trading away draft picks, and they're back into right-now mode, and they'd only deviated from right-now mode for a year or two. And so I think that's maybe the concern, is that and I have been assured that that's not going to happen, that the big picture is still the most important thing, and their 3 to 5 year plan is still what they're beholden to, and they're going to stick with that. But I think that's the fear from the more vocal side of things. But I will say, to then back up your point, is that there is also a very large group of fans who love what they're seeing. They love the work ethic. They are in love with the goaltender. They've got this guy that they can finally rally behind, a guy that they feel like is a potential franchise player. And so they've got an opportunity to rival, to get behind a player like Dustin Wolf and have him be that next guy that's like the franchise guy, the face of the franchise, and then some other really exciting names coming, and see this as an opportunity for some players to gain some valuable experience down the stretch and in the playoffs, and say, how can you not cheer for a team that works their tails off, that have a likable goalie like Dustin Wolf, have a likable head coach like Ryan Huska, a likable general manager like Craig Conroy, and then guys that, from Michael Backlund to Craig Conroy to the Jonathan Huberdeau resurgence, the attitude, like in a good way, the snarl and tone setting of Nazem Kadri, all those types of things, I think that you've got a large group of fans who really have kind of fallen in love with this group. That was a long soliloquy. I'm sorry.
No, it was beautiful. It's I tell you what, I saw a stat last night. This is for Team Tank, and the Buffalo Sabres have gone 13 straight years with a top 15 pick in the NHL draft. And the Sabres have been the poster boys for mediocrity over that span. And it's Buffalo that Murray Edwards points out in my brief conversations with him over the years. He's the first team they point to every time as to how picking high, tanking, however you want to put it, doesn't necessarily mean you ever get out of the woods. It's about building a culture first and foremost. I really believe that. And I think that in a year and a half, they've done an incredible job at rebuilding a culture that was quite frankly broken before under the old regime. So it's fresh, it's new, it's exciting in the room. It should be exciting for most people in the city. I get that they want, you know, there are some people that will never change their mind and think the only way to win a cup is to go to the bottom before you get to the top. I don't agree with that. I think there are, you know, examples of how you can avoid going right to the bottom before getting back to the top. And look, I'm not sure I ever, you know, is this city ever going to win a Stanley Cup? I don't know. But the point is, they're moving in the right direction. And in that 13 years that the Sabres have drafted in the top 15, I don't want to put you on the spot, but would you be able to render a guess, because you're good at this stuff, as to how many times the Calgary Flames have had a top 15 pick?
Since in the 13 years?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say like probably six times.
Yeah, five times.
Five times?
Five times. You know, you got your, just off the top of my head, it was like Coronado, Parekh, Bennett, Tkachuk, and I'm just missing another obvious one. But anyway, you know, so, you know, and over these 13 years, Calgary Flames have a much better record than the Buffalo Sabres and have made the playoffs a couple times in there as well. Look, I'm not saying it's a stellar record. I'm just saying, like, when's the payoff? And in the meantime, you've lost an entire generation of Buffalo Sabres fans who just can't get behind this team because it's a sea of mediocrity every time they hit the ice. And so, you know, that's the argument to me. The Buffalo Sabres, like we saw last night, that's the argument to me for not getting too bogged down. Do I think it'd be great if the Flames could have that top pick next year and Montreal doesn't take it? Yeah, of course, that would be optimal for everybody. But, you know, in the meantime, why can't we have nice things here in Calgary moving forward?
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation when you start talking about the bigger picture stuff. Small picture, I think Ryan Huska has done a great job. I even thought he did a great job in his first year, because one thing that I was, I don't want to say concerned about, because I've always been a big supporter of Ryan, and that goes to personal bias because he's so easy to deal with, and you know, you get to know, especially with the assistant coaches coming in on our post-game show on home games, you know, you get to know the assistants pretty well over the course of a number of years. And so, you know, in a very biased way, I have been a huge fan of Ryan Huska, but taking myself away from that, I was concerned that a guy that hasn't coached at the head coach level in the NHL, you know, didn't really play in the NHL, played the one game, and is going from an assistant with the same group to a head coach, I was concerned that maybe the group wouldn't buy in, and I was concerned that maybe they would, you know, kind of be like, ah, this guy, well, this isn't it. Well, the complete opposite has happened, Francis. Like, what were we talking about a year ago at this time, 18 months ago at this time, all year last year, despite them missing the playoffs by a country mile? That team, whether when they were still competitive and hadn't traded so many guys away, or after the deadline when Hanifin, Tanev, Lindholm, Zadorov were all gone, what could you say about them all year long? They worked their tail off, and they played for that coach. They bought in to the brand of hockey he wanted, and they brought into the whole idea that they've got to work their asses off if they're going to want to have success. And even down the stretch where they fell further and further out of the playoffs, you could never question the work ethic. And so now you take that and make that as a constant into year two, and now some of the strategic changes, X's and O's changes, system changes we've seen from Ryan Huska and some of the adjustments he's made, and now they're having more success. I think it's just another indicator. Yeah, this guy's been a really, I think he's done a really good job. And I was a big defender of his last year, and I think he's doing a really good job in year two. That's why I really, really enjoyed the read today on sportsnet.ca.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I think one of the concerns when he was hired, and I remember talking to him about it, I remember thinking, you know, I said, you know, my theory is kind of that the one thing you're going to have to protect about against is getting pushed around, like, because you're so used to being the good guy, the good cop, the assistant coach that everybody loves, you know, and now they're going to, you know, guys are going to test you and see if they can still, you know, because you don't have the experience, you've never played in the NHL. And Huska told you guys that great story the other day at the poker tournament about how it would have been easy for a guy like Mark Giordano when he first came in as an assistant.
Yeah, yeah.
To just say to him, look, you never played in the NHL. Well, one game. you know, and just kind of disrespect him. But, you know, that captain bought in, and this captain bought in. Backlund bought in as well. Even last year when he was he captain last year? Yeah, he was last year. No.
Who?
Backlund, yeah, it was this summer.
Backlund was captain last year too.
Last year, okay, yeah. It's all running.
Remember, Conroy came in and told he you said, and I that like, yeah, we're naming a captain after two years without one, right?
Exactly, yeah, I'm getting all the years mixed
I know,
together.
I know,
I'm old, but he, you know, these guys have bought in, and I think that's a real testament to guys like Kadri. Like, I think I was saying on the TV broadcast last night, we spent so much time talking about Wolf. The new guys coming in out of the lineup, the excitement with them, and Connor Zeri, and all these other developments. We don't spend enough time talking about the guy who's, quite frankly, is probably their most consistent player this year. You know, and his, God, without his scoring, I mean, I know scoring is their number one issue, but without his scoring and his creativity and assists and all that with Huberto, if those two guys hadn't meshed together, I don't know where the team would be. But you know, Kadri deserves credit. A lot of people thought he didn't even want to be here. And yet here he is buying into everything the coach is saying and part of that leadership group of six or seven. I say seven now because I think Lomberg's a big part of it as well now. And I figured he would be from the start. But, you know, those, the Uyghurs, the Andersons, these guys are all on board. And I'm not sure you say that about a lot of teams around the league. And that's a hell of a thing to it's a hell of a feather in the coach's cap to be able to get that out of these guys. And he's done it. And, you know, he said there's an edge to Ryan Huska. We don't see it. And Conroy was saying in the piece that, you know, I like that he doesn't snap behind the bench at guys because he knows the camera's on him and it's not a good look. But I want Ryan to be Ryan. And I know that there are times when he's pretty hot. And after losses, Conroy says he does not talk to him after a loss. He waits till the next day when he's calmed down to kind of talk about, you know, what happened in the game, where they went wrong, where they went right, and all that sort of stuff. So there's an edge to Ryan Huska that he doesn't show us, but I think the players know that it's there and they've felt it and they've seen it. And that, you know, it's not a reign of terror like we've seen in the past year. It's just, hey, it's kind of, my guess is it's kind of like that. You never want to disappoint your dad. And I'm not saying they look at him like a father figure, but you know, when you really respect someone, you never really want to let them down. And I really feel like that's kind of the nature of that relationship between the leadership group and this coach.
Yeah. Well, they are sitting in a playoff spot right now. They are playing for this coach. They continue to beat. Here's one thing that is kind of new for this group. They're beating teams below them in the standings with regularity, yeah, which is pretty neat to see. That hasn't happened since the 21-22 season when they just feasted on lower teams. That's a big reason why the Flames are in a playoff spot right now is that they have far more consistently this year taken points off of teams they're quote-unquote supposed to take wins off of and points off of, which is important. Not perfect. You know, they lost a game to Nashville. There's lost a game to Columbus, although Columbus is pretty good this year. They've dropped some of those games, but by and large, they've done a pretty good job, Francis, of winning those games. And then every once in a while, they go into Winnipeg and steal one from the Jets and take 2 points away from them on top of that. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about the way things are going this season.
And last night, look, every coach makes adjustments. I'm not suggesting that Huska's a genius because he did this, but that game to me was won because of Jacob Pelche. Like I never thought I'd say that, but his promotion at the beginning of the second period to that top line just brought an energy and it looked like chemistry. I mean, who knows, but you know, they just meshed so well together. They were dangerous on almost every shift. And even when they weren't dangerous, they were hitting, you know, Pelche almost ran Kozak over the boards. He was making nifty little passes. He scores a beautiful goal on a redirect. Like, he was the best player on the ice last night. And that doesn't happen if the coach doesn't notice that and say, hey, you're going from the fourth line to the first line and turn the game on a dime. You remember early in that second period, Sabres had scored twice. They had all the momentum. They were dominating. I remember turning to Corey Sarge and saying, I would call a timeout right now because this is abysmal. And you don't see Huska do that very often in the middle of a game. Most coaches don't, but I would have called a timeout. Instead, what he did was call a timeout basically for Pospisil and demoted him and eventually sat three guys for the entire third period and just let Pelche go to work. So I give – this is all about the empowering that he does for young guys and players all around the lineup. Pelche now has an absolute newfound swagger, if only for one night, but he felt so good last night, kissing everything that moved, including Ryan Leslie's head at the end of the night.
I saw that. That was awesome.
It was so funny. And, you know, that is infectious. The crowd loves it. The city's all talking about it today. His energy, his excitement. People feed off that stuff. They love the young kids. And that was an adjustment made by this coach. And, you know, he does that a lot when he feels the need to do it. But he deserves credit for when he makes that move and it works. Oftentimes it won't work. But last night it did. And the other thing I just wanted to say about, you know, drafting high guys. I've heard a lot of people say over the years, like, who are you paying to see in this city? Like the naysayers, the negative Nellies that about the Flames. They say, well, who are you paying to see? Like, they don't have any stars. Well, I said it on the broadcast last night. I'll say it again. Like, I'm sorry, but Dustin Wolf has proven to be that he's a franchise player. He's a star, and he's bordering on superstardom. Like, fourth best goals against average in the league as a rookie. Like, you're swimming with sharks now, son, and he's just absolutely killing it. So I beg to differ when people say they don't have a superstar. They do now, and people are paying big money to come and see Dustin Wolf, and they should. And that's why I think people get so mad when you post in the morning sometimes when Vladar's starting, because that's the guy people are paying to come and see at the Dome. And I know he starts at home most of the time anyway, but, like, you know, there was a guy drafted. He was the fourth last pick in the draft that year, and he's turned into a superstar. With all the lottery picks that the Flames have right now, and I refer to just draft picks as being lottery tickets, you know, there's a pretty good chance somebody else is going to emerge. It may not be the guy everybody sees coming, like a first, second, or third pick overall, but with the number of guys that they've been picking, I'm pretty sure we're still going to see more and more Connor Zeris out there.
It's the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. His latest on Eric Francis, on Ryan Huska, rather. Yeah, not like you to write about yourself all that often.
No.
So Eric's latest on Ryan Huska is available at Sportsnet.ca as we speak right now. It's a really good read on what Huska's done so well this year and what the future may hold for him with the Flames organization. Lots more still to get to on the EF Hour this week. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Eric Francis Hour continues. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca this hour on Flames Talk. And we were talking about Dustin Wolf and honestly, you talk about a coach and a coach's success. How many times will you hear a coach or somebody in hockey, Francis, say, show me a good coach and I'll show you a good goalie, right? And boy,
yep.
They've got a good goalie in Dustin Wolf, but maybe what would he have been had he not been a star goalie?
What a lovely segue. Boy, did I have fun talking to Michelle Wolf, his mom, on the mom's trip. And, I wrote a piece earlier this week about how he was singularly focused in his life to be a hockey player. I mean, the story is well documented that he would kick in his mother's stomach while he was, before he was born, whenever she would go to Sharks games. And, she said it was either that or he was going to be a Dolphin trainer. And you're correct. You don't hear that a lot around the National Hockey League. And I don't think Dustin particularly liked it. I think it's one of those moments where you're like, okay, come on, mom. Like, really? Like, I'm in the NHL now. Can you stop telling the kicking story and the Dolphin story? But I did think it was funny. Like, we talked to Wolf a lot. It's pretty dry. It's usually after a win. It's getting boring. He keeps winning. And he talks about how, everything is an opportunity and he just wants to give his team a chance to win. But to talk to Dustin and kind of get to know the person behind the mask, we're seeing a little more of it. And, that was kind of why I wrote that piece. He talked about how when he was growing up, he grew up near the ocean. He's always been fascinated by marine life, but he's deathly afraid of sharks. He says, for me, he says, I've surfed, but I hated it. I was terrified. He says, it's water parks and lakes for me. That's it. I don't go in the ocean. And he says he hates sharks. But he was fascinated by dolphins, always was. He used to go to SeaWorld, and now he's at Sea of Red, and he's a little more comfortable there, I'd say.
Oof, that was a good try for a segue, too.
From SeaWorld to the Sea of Red, buddy. Oh, my God.
Oh, well done. Well done.
But you know what? It was actually interesting. His mom was saying, like I said, how do you think he's handled this first full year? And she literally just shrugged and was like, this is what he does. Like, I'm not surprised by a thing he's done this year. He's done it at every single level. I see no reason why he can't keep doing it. And this is just who my son is. Like, he's just a successful, really good goalie. Like, he's got that confidence that I don't think borders on cockiness. I think it's harnessed quite well. He's got that confidence, and his mom does too. I mean, she's seen it his whole life. Why wouldn't she be confident in his abilities? And she just went one step further. She says, I know that at this level, especially, they say, you can't play back-to-back games, but she says, he can. Like, I know he can. I've seen him do it his whole career in the AHL and junior. And even at this level, I know, yeah, everything's a little bit harder, a little bit faster. But my son could play back-to-back nights moving forward. So she even believes that it could go a step further. That's what moms are supposed to do.
Would you there are some, I would not say all, but there are some that believe, well, you got to start Wolf both games this weekend. Two tough teams. Not a lot of travel. You got to start Wolf both games this weekend. And I'm not like everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I disagree. I don't think you need to be forcing Dustin in January, three games in four nights. But what about you? Who?
Agree. No, I agree.
Okay.
But hey, when we start getting into, March, I've got no problem with it. But the big thing is right now, I mean, Danville, it's been a while since Danvladar has played, and he certainly hasn't played much over the last month. So you do have to, I don't care if you got Martin Brodeur or Patrick Waugh in net, you got to give the backup some reps every once in a while with regularity. And Danvladar's done nothing wrong, but Dustin Wolf's done everything right. So you've got to, this is a perfect, almost forced opportunity to play Vladar. I would play him on tomorrow, Saturday, and I would play Dustin on Sunday, but you know, you see it the same way?
No, let me give you my reasoning why I'd go the other way. I'd be curious as to what you'd say on this.
Yeah, I got a theory on it too.
So I'm first of all, it's worked. So did you say Wolf against the Jets and Vladar against Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'd go the opposite. So I'd first of all, it's worked them going Wolf on the first half, Vladar on the second half. That's been the pattern all year, and it's worked for the most part. But here's the other reason. First of all, the Jets felt like Wolf stole one from them last weekend. So I think if they see him again, there will be some extra motivation. So I'm like, I don't want, no, you know what? We're not going to let you use what you learned on Saturday against him 8 days later. So that would be one, but even more so on that same vein, you know who the Flames would be playing if the playoffs started today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'd be Winnipeg. And I would not, I don't want them getting more of a book on Wolf. They can do all the video they want. They can see all his other games. They've seen him once this year in his groove. Don't let him see him again. Let them learn any more in-game tendencies. Don't give them any more live reps against Dustin Wolf, because there is a decent chance that Flames Winnipeg is a round one playoff series this year. So I'm not letting the Jets see Wolf again.
You see, I could buy into that theory to a degree in that, look, that minor miracle he pulled out of his hat last Saturday in Winnipeg was, you know, I went nuts in terms of, to me, that, you know, I'm making all sorts of definitive statements like this is now officially his team. He is the franchise. Like that, you know, this was his crowning glory on a season where he's just been brilliant in every way. But to go into that building, that environment, that scenario, I mean, who thought he had a chance to do that and win? Nobody. And I think that it's going to even be even tougher to pull off a second miracle on the second half of back-to-backs in the toughest rink in the league to play in. So I kind of buy into that theory that go with your best goalie in the game that you think you have the best chance to win. Try to get at least the 2 points, because on Sunday you're probably sunk no matter what. So you can throw Vladar to the Wolves, which is kind of the way I really believe they've looked at it this year. They'll never admit that openly, because Vladar has been good and given them a chance to win even some of those games. But that's the way I kind of look at it too. Take the 2 points, or at least give yourself the best chance to get the 2 points that you probably can get in Minnesota. And then on Sunday, you know, you probably don't have much hope no matter who goes in net.
What's your feel on this playoff race, Francis, knowing where the Flames are? They sit three up on both Vancouver and St. Louis. In both cases, the Flames have played fewer games. So by lots of metrics, they're in the driver's seat just by points, games remaining, all that type of stuff. But on top of that, and I'm not overly confident the Flames are going to chase down an LA. I mean, maybe LA would be the one team they could chase down, although that puts them in a spot where maybe they're facing Edmonton in round one. But I think LA, especially with Doughty coming back, I think LA, Edmonton, Vegas, those are your three in the Pacific. But maybe the Flames can make a run at that. They're only four back of LA. But if for a second we assume for the sake of this conversation, they're fighting for the number two wild card spot, the final spot, and it's between them, Vancouver, St. Louis, and maybe Utah as well, because, you know, Utah has kept themselves on the fringe of this thing. Not only do the Flames have themselves in the driver's seat from a point standpoint, games played standpoint, but, like, do you have any faith in the three teams that are chasing them, that all of a sudden they're going to figure it out to an extent to be able to track down the Flames and really put the heat on? Because that's what I'm having even more trouble with. It's less about the Flames that I'm quite confident they're going to make the playoffs. It's more about my lack of confidence in the other three teams.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd go there. Look, the circus that's happening in Vancouver is certainly works to the Flames' advantage, for sure. I mean, we've seen that act before, where it's just a house of cards. I mean, I think we lived it here in Calgary last year to a degree. It's a different type of drama, no question about it, but it's a distraction and it's really hurting the team because we know Vancouver is a whole lot more talented than their record indicates. I definitely fear, you know, Vancouver figuring this out to some degree, you know, assuming they're going to trade JT Miller or however they decide to move forward. I think that will help resolve. And then I think wins will help resolve some of the drama too. So I still think Vancouver is the number one threat, and I think they're going to get better and better. So I don't have a lack of faith in Vancouver turning around. I think that they're the team the Flames need to worry about the most. And St. Louis also got that coaching bump, right? And I think they've played a lot better hockey since. And I think moving forward, I think they're going to be a heck of a threat too. So if you ask me to handicap those three, because I don't think Utah will stay in the race. We'll see them kind of slowly disappear. I think if I was going to handicap it, I'd say each one of those three has a 33% chance of grabbing that last wild card spot. I know that's not a hot take, and I'm not going out on a limb or anything.
Yeah.
But it's still something to say that the Calgary Flames have a 1-in-3 chance potentially of making the playoffs, in my mind. That is still a hell of an accomplishment and a shocking development for all of us.
What's your confidence level of Calgary doing what they need to do to control their own destiny? Because right now they do. They control their own path. And I'll say this. Every time I think the Flames are kind of like, okay, well, you know what? They played above their heads for this long, but maybe it's coming down to earth. Every time I get that inkling, every time they get it back on the rails. Every time they find a way to not let a losing streak get to 5-6. Like, you know, they've been able to, and part of that is because of the cushion that they built up in October, November. But every time I feel like, no, this thing's over and, you know, they're probably going to fall back into a situation where it's pretty clear they're a non-playoff team, competitive but non-playoff team. Every time, and I thought, you know, Francis, I thought they were going to be kind of where a Utah is, like 4 points back, 3 points back, sometimes two back, sometimes five back, in the mix, meaningful games, but I didn't have them quite where they are, protecting with a game in hand and having a multiple game lead as it stands right now. I never saw that. And so I'm getting more and more confident in this group and the way they're built, the way they're wired, the way they play, that they're going to be able to do what it takes on top of the lack of confidence I have in some other teams. I'm actually becoming more and more confident the Flames have what it takes to do what they need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's misguided to have confidence in this team. I think injuries would be the biggest concern I would have, because I just think they've tested their depth to some degree, and they've, you know, they've done well despite it, you know, with Pelche coming up and Cairns lately and some of these guys, you know, being difference makers, Kirkland being the biggest one this year probably. But, you know, I just don't know how many times you can go back to that well. And, you know, Dryden Hunt's now 1 point off the AHL scoring lead, which is just amazing story too. So, you know, I think they should have confidence, you know, if or when they call him up, and who knows about Clark Bishop. But injuries are a concern. And look, this search for a center, it's proven to be so tough,
yeah,
that I'm just not convinced it can happen during this season. I think that's an off-season move. I really do. And so if their hope is that the GM is going to come along and really bolster the lineup in some meaningful way, I think that's a little misguided. I don't think anybody in that room has illusions that that's going to happen. I do think the GM will go out and endeavor to reward these guys and try to do something, but it'll probably be pretty minor in terms of adding depth to the roster. Right? So, no, I think people should be optimistic. I mean, if I say 33% chance of making the playoffs, or maybe even bump it up to a coin toss, everyone in this city would have taken that at the beginning of this year.
It's been fun. I would encourage you to go check out that piece at sportsnet.ca once again on Ryan Huska. It's live right now. And if you're listening a little bit later on this weekend, it's easy to find on sportsnet.ca, or just go Google Eric Francis's name and you know, ignore the police reports and then get to the sportsnet.ca.
Good advice.
Nice. Great stuff, buddy. It was a good article. Good chat. We will talk again next week, of course. But enjoy the games this weekend. And, yeah, have a great weekend. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Have a great weekend. Always good chatting with you.
Eric Francis is on Twitter at Eric Francis. You can catch him on Sportsnet and read him at sportsnet.ca. And that wraps us up on the Eric Francis Hour for another week. And the Eric Francis Hour this week is part of the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.